House will come to order. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Flickery.
Here.
Bonner.
Here.
Botten.
Here.
Brechtel.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Burkhart.
Here.
Bird.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Childers.
Here.
Childers. Connolly.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Davison.
Here.
Edmonds.
Here.
Eklund.
Here.
Esquivel.
Here.
Freeman.
Here.
Gay.
Here.
Gingery.
Here.
Goggles.
Here.
Greer.
Here.
Green.
Here.
Harshman.
Harshman.
Harvey. Harvey.
Here.
Hunt.
Here.
Illaway.
Here.
Yagi.
Here.
Kasparic.
Here.
Croker.
Here.
Crone.
Here.
Lockhart.
Here.
Laux. Laux. Lubno.
Here.
Madden.
Here.
McKim.
Here.
McComey.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Moniz.
Here.
Nicholas.
Here.
Patton.
Here.
Peasley.
Here.
Pedersen.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Petroff.
Here.
Korberg.
Here.
Roscoe.
Here.
Simlick.
Here.
Shepperson.
Here.
Stewart.
Here.
Stubson. Stubson. Teeters.
Here.
Throne.
Here.
Vronish.
Here.
Wallace.
Here.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Here.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Here.
Mr. Speaker.
Here.
Childers.
Here.
Harshman. Harshman. Laux. Laux. Stubson. Stubson. 57 present, 3 absent.
Please stand and join us in the morning prayer with the Reverend Patrick Bradley.
In the 9th chapter of the Book of the Wisdom of Solomon, we read Solomon's prayer for wisdom. God of my fathers, Lord of mercy, you have made all things by your word, and in your wisdom have established man to rule the creatures produced by you, to govern the world in holiness and justice, and to render judgment in integrity of heart. Give me wisdom, the attendant at your throne, and reject me not from among your children. For I am your servant, the son of your handmaid, a man weak and short-lived, and lacking in comprehension of judgment and of laws. Indeed, though one may be perfect among the sons of men, if wisdom who comes from you be not with him, he shall be held in no esteem. As the Lord God heard Solomon's prayer and sent wisdom to be with Solomon and to be his guide, today we pray that same prayer and ask that the wisdom come upon both this house and upon the Senate, which is deliberating at this time as well. And this we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Because I work here, I'm not allowed to.
We're at that order of business, Journal Committee Report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 1st, 2011 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Freeman, Representative Kasparik.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 7, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Davison, Eklund, Hunt, Laux, Moniz, Semlek, Zwanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 227, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 243, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman.
Any announcements? Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, the mugs are in, so I'm not going to distribute anybody's mugs until I hear from more of you, just to make sure I don't run out. So please let me know by adjournment on Friday how many mugs you would like. They are $5 a piece. And then we'll distribute them next week. Thank you.
We are at that order of business, bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 36.
House Bill 36, introduced by Representative Escobel, an act relating to the Wyoming Cancer Control Act.
House Bill 36 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 92.
House Bill 92, introduced by Representative Lubnow, an act relating to crimes and offenses, impersonation through electronic means.
House Bill 92, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 99.
House Bill 99, introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to substance abuse treatment funding awards.
House Bill 99, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 103.
House Bill 103, introduced by Representative McKim, an act relating to the Western Regional Higher Education Compact.
House Bill 103, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 129.
House Bill 129, introduced by Representative Harshman, an act relating to nuclear energy production study.
House Bill 129, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 139.
House Bill 139, introduced by Representative Bonner, an act relating to Wyoming Veterans Memorial Highway.
House Bill 139, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 147.
House Bill 147, introduced by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, an act relating to taxation and revenue regarding excise tax vendor compensation.
House Bill 147, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 153.
House Bill 153, introduced by Representative Semlek, an act relating to agricultural tax refund program.
House Bill 153, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 155.
House Bill 155, introduced by Representative Lubnow, an act relating to student assessment amendments.
House Bill 155, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 162.
House Bill 162, introduced by Representative Burkhart, an act relating to the Office of Occupational Health and Safety.
House Bill 162, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 176.
House Bill 176, introduced by Representative Miller, an act relating to nuclear energy as carbon-free renewable energy.
House Bill 176, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 178.
House Bill 178, introduced by Representative Kraft, an act relating to cemeteries and burials.
House Bill 178, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 188.
House Bill 188, introduced by Representative Childers, an act relating to gambling definitions.
House Bill 188, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 210.
House Bill 210, introduced by Representative Green, an act relating to civil procedure regarding landlord-tenant return of deposits.
House Bill 210, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 3.
House Joint Resolution Number 3, introduced by Representative Childers, an act to ask Congress and the United States Supreme Court to not grant powers beyond what they are supposed to have by the U.S. Constitution.
House Joint Resolution Number 3, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We're at that order of business, bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move a consent list consisting of the following bills: House Bill 6, House Bill 66, House Bill 85, House Bill 107, House Bill 114, House Bill 123, House Bill 140, House Bill 145, House Bill 146, House Bill 167, and House Bill 177.
Does anyone wish to have any of these bills removed from the consent list? The reading clerk will read the bills.
House Bill 6, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to packaging, labeling, and advertising of honey, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 66, introduced by the Water Committee, an act relating to water development projects funding, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 85, introduced by Representative McKim, an act relating to teacher contracts and teacher suspensions, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 107, introduced by Representative Botten, an act relating to municipal court jury trials, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 114, introduced by Representative Escobel, an act relating to insurance premiums, failure to pay, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 123, introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to circuit courts, surety bonds repeal, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 140, introduced by Representative Roscoe, an act relating to governmental immunity public transportation claims, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 145, introduced by Representative Escobel, an act relating to motor vehicle registration timing, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 146, introduced by Representative Escobel, an act relating to vehicle sales and use tax, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 167, introduced by Representative Korberg, an act relating to crimes and offenses dealing with the Castle Doctrine modifications, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 177, introduced by Representative Yagi, an act relating to state holidays and observances, Vietnam and Veterans Welcome Home and Thank You Day, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the House? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Freeman. Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt, Hunt, Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux, Laux, Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey, Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Braunisch,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
Hunt, Laux. Laux. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? 59 aye, one absent. As to House Bill 6, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, one absent. As to House Bill 66, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, one absent. As to House Bill 85, are there any changes? Byrd, aye to no. Miller, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, two no, one absent. As to House Bill 107, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, one absent. As to House Bill 114, are there any changes? Croker, aye to no. Greer, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, two no, one absent. As to House Bill 123, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 59 aye, one absent. As to House Bill 140, Are there any changes? Miller? Aye to no. Shepperson? Aye to no. Brechtel? Aye to no. Peasley? Aye to no. Gay? Aye to no. Croker? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 53 aye, 6 no, 1 absent. As to House Bill 145, are there any changes? Patton? Aye to no. Greer? Aye to no. Patton? Patton, aye. Are there any other changes? Semlich, aye to no. Are there other changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, 2 no, 1 absent. As to House Bill 146, are there any changes? Greer, aye to no. Stubson, aye to no. Semlich, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 56 aye, 3 no, 1 absent. As to House Bill 167, are there any changes? Are there any changes? Conley, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 58 aye, 1 no, 1 absent. As to House Bill 177, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 absent.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bills 6, 66, 85, 107, 114, 123, 140, 145, 146, 167, and 177 have passed the House. We're at that order of business. Bills on third reading and final passage regular list. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 82.
House Bill 82, introduced by Representative Byrd, an act relating to fair employment practices, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 82 having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Davison, aye.
Edmonds,
no.
Eklund,
no.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
no.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
no.
Green,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
no.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparic,
aye.
Croker,
no.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart,
no.
Laux, Laux, aye. Lubno,
no.
Madden,
no.
McKim,
no.
McComey,
no.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Patton,
no.
Peasley,
no.
Pedersen,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Petrov,
aye.
Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
aye.
Semlich,
no.
Shepperson,
no.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
aye.
Braunisch,
no.
Wallace,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Davison, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 30 aye, 30 no.
House Bill 82. Having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 82 has failed to pass the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 141.
House Bill 141, introduced by Representative Connolly, an act relating to governmental immunity waiver for hospital employees, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 141. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
No.
Edmonds.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Eklund.
No.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
No.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
No.
Lubno.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlick.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Steward.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
No.
Throne.
Aye.
Vronish.
No.
Wallace.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan. Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Yagi, aye to no. Harshman, aye to no. Eklund? Okay. Are there any other changes? Berger, aye to no. Madden, aye to no. Peterson, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 33 aye, 27 no.
House Bill 141, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 141 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 186.
House Bill 186, introduced by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, an act relating to the Wyoming Lottery, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number one to House Bill 186. This is a very, very simple bill. I also passed out a handout to you that's got the payback percentages of casino games. And what this amendment does is it just changes the payout to the public from 45% to 75%. And when I compared it to the other casino games, I've been to that Oasis City in the middle of the desert with all the casinos, and they're all really big and fancy, and they make plenty of money. And it just seems to me that if they can operate on all of their games paying back 75% or higher to the people, that we as a state should have a game that's more in line with those paybacks.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Speaker, I thought you were going to say Dave. I rise in opposition to this. It is the will of the body what percentage we put it at, and I do appreciate the bringer suggesting that we pay a little bit more out. I would like to see it a little bit less, but once again, it is a policy decision.
Anyone else for their first time? First time, Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would just point out that what we're doing here is a really radical comparison of apples and oranges, or maybe apples and broccoli, because what you're doing is comparing the percentages for true casino gambling games, which we are not doing at all. The lottery, as proposed here, is not the instant gratification type stuff that many of you are concerned about. And the 45% is absolutely the national standard. Almost all of the lotteries in the 42 or 43 other states have the exact same percentage as is in this bill. So when you consider that in the amount that is distributed to the state, and then the other amounts, there's the one place where we have deviated a little bit from the national standards is that we are actually a little more generous to our retailers in this bill than many of the other states are. So this is actually going to benefit the retailers here in our state as opposed to some of the others. But as far as this 45%, that is absolutely the national standard.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment and on and for the bill, again, we've been messing around with this for a long time. The people in my district and southeast part of Wyoming overwhelmingly want this lotto to come into effect, and what we need to do is just facilitate that. There's people from the other part of the state that have some concerns about it. You know, really, this is voluntary. If you don't like it over in your part of the state, then just don't do it. But I'm here to represent my constituents, and my constituents want this to go forward.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When this bill was brought to the floor, it was described as something being done for entertainment for the people in Wyoming. And if it's just for entertainment, why shouldn't we give them as much money back as we can? On and for the amendment.
Anyone else for your first time? Second time? Second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Croker.
Again, I would just suggest if the percentages don't work at this number that we probably, if we can't do a lottery without taking advantage of the people, I would suggest we shouldn't do it. I'll call for the question.
All those in favor of third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 186, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 186 has failed. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 186, and I will withdraw this amendment at the appropriate time. I didn't get in on the discussion when the bill was first read. Most of the points were covered that I wanted to talk about. So there were a few points that I think we need to discuss about this before we introduce such a huge change in our culture and our values that we have here in this state. One of the arguments used, we're one of the very few states that doesn't have a lottery. And I don't think that's a bad thing. As I look at Wyoming, we're oftentimes as a friend of mine put it, the last place on the face of the earth. And, it's not necessarily a bad thing to hold with what we had before. And I would like to push back and resist the temptation to have a lottery. One of the arguments is we were a state that's managed our money well, and we don't necessarily need it to survive. And there are arguments that it would cost more than you'd get out of it, and what you'd have to pay for social services to correct compulsive gambling. I don't buy the argument that this doesn't lead to it doesn't affect compulsive gambling. And I know the percentages of families are small, but it is a group of our people, a small percentage that would be affected by the a compulsion to gamble. It's not a bad plan to be the only place in the union that they could go for and view as a haven away from lotteries or casinos and I know we do have a situation in the center of the state with casinos, but there's a lot of the state that's pretty much free and away from it. And for those people, I guess I would like to offer them a haven, and One of the points that was brought up that really bothers me is that our government would be involved in encouraging the population, even though it's voluntarily spent, to spend their money on something that's frivolous. I've heard the saying that your chances of being hit by lightning are probably better than winning the lottery. So I don't really understand why our state would really even want to encourage people to be involved in poor management of their money. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The first point that I would like to make is that, and it's been made before, but I think that the strongest argument or suggestion that we do provide this is, number one, a great number of our citizens are asking for it. Number two, out every north, south, east, and west borders of this state, those who are interested in participating in these activities are driving outside of our state to participate in other states' lotteries. And when they go there, they take their dollars and their entertainment plans. They spend the night, they eat dinner, they shop for groceries, they do all of those things outside of our state and then buy a lottery ticket and come back to Wyoming. So this is strongly supported by our retailers who know and see every day. The state to the south of us, the most money revenue generating outlet in that state, is just below this border. And I can say the same is true to the north of us. I live very close to that northern border, and I know that a great number of my friends and neighbors are making that trip every week to be able to participate in these. The argument that this is somehow going to, you know, for those few tiny percentage of people who have a problem with gambling. Number one, they have ample opportunity in the middle of our state and across all but one border of our state. And whether the scientific studies that have been done around this issue, those problems, if they and when they occur, are almost always around the kind of casino gaming that this lottery is not. And lotteries do not participate or contribute to those problems. And I think the most compelling one of all was the one that I mentioned in our previous debate, which is that the Harvard University study that shows that when you're looking at a lottery, as opposed to all of the other gaming situations, it actually goes from being a regressive situation to a progressive situation. And as the winnings get larger, the people who are purchasing those tickets are highly educated, affluent members of our society. So I'll call that good. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Zwanitzer, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to the amendment and for support of the bill. Let me remind you, it's not just for the citizens of Wyoming. It also addresses all those 8 to 9 million people that come through our state. It puts money into the retailer's pocket, and that is very important. Anytime we get them to stop for a little bit extra time, buy some extra accessories at the food stores and such and enjoy our state, I think that's a very positive thing that we want to look to. And remember, those that want to gamble have to go out of the state, and how many millions of dollars are we losing out of state? And I'd just also address, as we look at the western part of the state, we'll actually have an influx of people into our state when the lottery comes in, because they do not have a lottery in that state to the west of us, and I think you'll see an influx of folks showing up on some of our communities on the west edge of our state. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Rising on and against the bill, you know, I have to go back to my fundamental principles on this, and I do not believe it is the responsibility and the role of the government to encourage people to do things that are reckless. And if gambling was really about the people that could afford it, it wouldn't make any difference. I don't have a problem with people that can afford to recreationally gamble. The problem is the people that can't afford it are the ones that are most enticed to do it. And they're going to spend money that they should have been spending on groceries to feed their families. And if you pass this legislation, I guarantee you that'll be less money that those poorer families that are looking for that easy win that it's never going to come are going to spend that money, and there are kids that are going to go hungry because you passed this legislation today. I'm not comfortable with us taking the position in the state that we are going to encourage reckless behavior. And we as a state should encourage our citizens to spend their money wisely and invest it. You know, life is enough of a gamble as it is. If you want to gamble, you ought to try joining agriculture for a little while. You know, we take gambles, but those are calculated risks, and there are rewards. This is something that people are not going to win. I mean, we might get in a multi-state lottery. Has anybody looked at the chance of somebody from the state of Wyoming winning it? We might go 20 years without having someone from Wyoming even win this thing. So I urge you to vote no on the bill.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Many of you know I clearly am opposed to gambling in the state of Wyoming. Most of you already have feelings about that one way or another, so I'm not going to belabor that point. But I'm telling you, I hope all of you took the opportunity to read this bill. The structure and the way that this lottery is being set up is extremely troublesome to me. In fact, it just scares me to death. I do not understand this Wyoming Lottery Corporation that, quote, well, really isn't part of the state, but it is an instrumentality of the state. I asked questions in committee of the whole on page 6, what does prominent person mean? I asked, how was this corporation going to be responsible to the citizens and to the state of Wyoming? And the bill is very explicit. It's only through a series of audits and reports. That's all we have to offer for this multi-million dollar revenue generating corporation. You turn to page 13. We're allowing them to incur debt, including entering into financing agreements with the state, agencies or instrumentalities of the state, but we're assured, well, the state's not going to be liable for any of this, but we're allowing them that opportunity. I mentioned on page 13, Romanet number 11, this corporation is so powerful that stand alone, it can administer oaths, it can take depositions, it can issue subpoenas, it can compel the attendance of witnesses. This is a very, very powerful corporation structure, standalone structure that everyone's continually saying it's independent of the state, that we are putting into state statute and blessing here today on this floor. We're allowing them on page 14. Apparently they're going to have to enter into some type of contract or agreement with local, state and local law enforcement to enforce what they're going to do as a corporation. You turn to page, this is a really interesting one for us not being responsible. We brought this out, page 23, lines 5 through 9. We're saying that the lottery would have to be discontinued if it wasn't self-sustaining. But this is the kicker. Unless the legislature by general law establishes eligibility requirements and appropriates specific funds within the budget, It doesn't sound to me like the state's taking a back seat. You go to page 47, they talk about competitive bidding. Then they say in the bidding process, the corporation can administer its own bidding, or they may utilize the services of the Department of A&I or other state agencies. So it doesn't sound to me like they're going to do this independent of the state of Wyoming. This is not the appropriate mechanism to implement a lottery in the state of Wyoming. On and for the amendment and against the bill.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Don't need to repeat. I just want to repeat one thing. For every dollar that we gain, we have to take in four. So if we want $10 million, we're going to take in $40 million so that we have that $10 million. And with our population, even with the folks coming in, I think we're a little overcharged there. One of the new things, we keep hearing that there's 65% of the people in the state want a lottery. Just want to point out where that 65% figure came from. The newspaper in the center of the state, who endorses the lottery and wants us to have it, did a survey, and they said 65% came. So I don't know if you trust that information. But I did find that we did, as a state, voted. We had a referendum, and we voted on this. Let me remind you what the vote of the people was. 69% said we do not want a lottery. I've got the numbers here. So that means 31% said we would like a lottery. So I just like to consider that. I think we're getting a little bit skewed in trying to purport this. And so I'm for the amendment, against the bill. Thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, this bill comes every year, and every time it's the same argument that it's a regressive tax, but it's 100% voluntarily for someone to reach into their pocket and they're going to take out a dollar, and if they consider that part of their entertainment, I just don't see people taking their mortgage money and you know, it's a dollar to buy a ticket, you know, or taking their grocery money. You know, it's completely voluntary. You buy a square on a football pool for the Super Bowl this next weekend, you know, you gambled. If you had a little poker game with your buddies in the basement, you gambled. If you bought a scratch-off ticket as you were driving through Nebraska or the state to the east or state to the south, you gambled. And like I say, it's we're doing something here that's voluntary. And if it takes 20 years for someone down the road in the state of Wyoming to actually win it, then we've made someone's dreams come true. You know? I think if there's someone in here that hasn't actually ever, you know, participated in that, you know, at one point or another, you know, yeah, I'd like to see that. But, you know, I think it's about time we join the rest of the states and do it. I mean, you know, we're going back to the old West in a lot of respects. With, you know, we do that with guns. You know, we might as well go back and join the old West and have some good old poker games in the state of Wyoming. I think that would be great. And I'd like to see some roulette tables in the state of Wyoming. How many of us have ever flown to Vegas? Don't tell me you didn't go to Vegas and you didn't pull one of them one-armed bandits. You know, so we're not saying that's what we're going to do here in little old Wyoming. We just want to have a lottery. We want to give people the opportunity. And like I said, you know, you're going to give someone the opportunity to reach in their pocket and pull that dollar out of their pocket, but we're not forcing them to do it. So against the amendment and for the bill.
Representative McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As a part of that minute percentage that has a problem with gambling, I stand and oppose this bill today, simply for the fact as I see us as creating a large monopoly in the state of Wyoming. And just to keep it short, if we have one of our, say, 500,000 people in the state of Wyoming that wins a lottery, we still have 499,999 losers. And to me, that's not very good odds. So I ask you carefully to consider this bill. Thank you.
Representative Gasparic.
For the amendment and against the bill, as you know, we've talked about people who can voluntarily go and buy a lottery ticket, voluntarily go and gamble. As someone who has a family member who has a problem with gambling, you know, I've seen this family member go bankrupt, borrow money from me, borrow money from other family members, not pay utility bills. This seems like an easy thing to do, but it's a step in the wrong direction for our state.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to remind the body one more time, give consideration to the Wyoming Downs and the things that we have there. That's in my district, and it's not just me, but it's an industry we have in the state of Wyoming, and I call your attention to the fiscal note on the back of this bill. It addresses that particular point. There has been discussion about this and where we're at. We're struggling with the racehorse industry in Wyoming. It's an established industry, and the impact that this thing may have on it as we go forward, I would certainly encourage the body to look at that and vote against this bill. One other thing, we're establishing policy here for the residents of the state of Wyoming, and I would submit the best way to determine the people's pulse when it goes to public policy is put it on the ballot. Let them decide. That way we would know. My good colleague from House District 19 just addressed this was one time approached, and it was resoundingly defeated. And if there's been a change in philosophy, a change of opinion of the population of Wyoming, put it on the ballot. Let it be decided. This body has clear direction then, because from my area, definitely no on the lottery. And it's not a neighborhood whispering program to me. It's loud and clear. It's phone calls, emails, and personal people meetings that's had on this issue. So I strongly encourage people to vote against the bill and support the amendment.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against amendment and for the bill again. Just real briefly, I've heard some discussion here about the apparatus that oversees this being set up. Keeping in mind that we have to have some accountability and we have to have some people who are going to be in this apparatus to overlook this, so we have to do due diligence in there. And this bill does address that. It insulates the state and its financial obligations from the game itself as much as it can. It goes through and sets up an organization that is sound. So that particular argument, you take it for what it's worth. We were quoted some percentages from an election. What we need to recognize that that election took place quite a while ago, and I think a significant amount of time. And so we as a body and we as a population that live in this state, our attitudes do change. The makeup of the state has significantly changed since that election ballot issue. And so I can only say that the current mood of the people in the state that contacted me are for this measure, and I think we need to vote it up.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have no emotional horse in this bill. It can go either way. I have been told that lotteries are taxes for idiots, and after I say that, if this bill passes, I plan on buying quite a few tickets. As a bill, I think as a lottery bill is probably as good as it gets. The instant gratification is gone. The state doesn't have any money invested in that. But when the vote comes, I'll vote against it. I've had family members that have lost significant money in bingo, which is now legal in Wyoming, and that kind of concerns me, and there is going to be an abuse. Just don't feel comfortable expanding the opportunities to go either way. I have problems that the money isn't specifically said to go to a particular place. As a community college trustee, I went to several national conventions where the lottery was used to finance community colleges. It was sold for that. People were very excited about supporting community colleges, and then we needed to use some of that money to support universities, and then we had to use some of that money to support the K-12 programs, and then maybe something else, maybe cancer, I don't know. So I would like to have more of an idea of where that money is going to go. There's not a lot of money that's going to come in from the state for the lottery. That kind of concerns me. Like I said at the beginning of this short speech, I guess, is I don't have an emotional horse. It can go either way. Think about some of those things, and good luck in your vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, against the amendment for the bill, I'm simply up here to provide a couple of facts. A survey done several years ago concerning gambling in this state, that survey clearly said that the citizens of this state do not support casino-type gambling. There was no mention of the lottery. First thing. Second thing, I'd like to read a very brief letter from the owner of a certain horse track in the southwestern part of the state. As an owner and operator of retail facilities in the state of Wyoming, I am writing to you to clarify an issue recently brought to my attention. It is possible that certain legislators may have recently spoken in error concerning our company's operations and interest in pending legislation. This organization has recently helped in crafting and shaping legislation for a lottery in Wyoming. We view the lottery based on a successful model in Georgia as beneficial to the state, retailers in Wyoming, and broadly popular among the state's constituents. To overcome any confusion regarding this issue, please lodge this letter as our company's support for House Bill 186. And then I would remind the body that there have been two surveys in this state, one by a newspaper in the center of the state and one by a newspaper in this community, and they both, the surveys indicated that the citizens of the state support a lottery. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll be brief. It's been said that we don't want to legislate gambling. We'd want to open this up for people to make mistakes. Well, we've legislated that we can't have this. So, you know, which side of that fence you're going to fall down on? We in Wyoming have decided that we're going to regulate all different types of these types of operations, which we've done. What this bill is about passing with regulations the ability to form a lotto. It is not the state that's doing it. It would be done by private corporations with controls that are in the bill. And those controls are in the bill because they need to be in the bill to make sure that this thing is on the up and up. So I'm rising in opposition to the amendment and for the bill.
Representative Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just got some new information a little while ago, but I just wanted to make certain that people understand that the lottery isn't an answer to any of our economic problems. In Massachusetts, I have an article here that says that many people have lost their jobs because the lottery is down. And over the last three complete fiscal years, the lottery sales in central Massachusetts fell $37 million, or 6%. According to this paper, it says that The drop was even more pronounced in the affluent suburbs. But while few figure the wisdom of cutting back on spending on scratch tickets and keno, the lottery has taken a big hit, and it's cost a lot of jobs, and the counties and cities are all struggling because they are now, the money that they counted on is no longer there. I just want to make sure that we know what we're doing today, that if we want this for Wyoming, then I guess it's a yes vote, but on the amendment and against the bill.
Anyone else for their first time, second time, prior to the sponsor, second time, somebody step up. Representative Wallace, second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Most of the things that I was going to mention have already been taken care of. Just want to add a couple of thoughts. One is that the our own LSO research office produced a report, and I trust the research that they do, that based on Wyoming's demographics and the actual experience of our surrounding states that have lotteries, that their research indicated that we would be bringing in, that the games would produce $30 to $40 million, and of that, the state share, which this body would have the opportunity to decide what is the best use of those funds, would be about $11 million a year. In the handouts that were passed out earlier, while some states have had, 6% decrease in their revenues, in the state that was mentioned that year, they received nearly $900 million in their state coffers. Might be down, but they still are having the benefit of quite a lot of that economic benefit. The other thing that I would like to point out is that this bill is based absolutely and very closely modeled after the systems that are in place in 42 or 43 other states and have been used for more than 15 years. So this is not an untried, untested, dangerous system. This is a system that, the corporation's members are appointed by our governor, and it has a great deal of controls and in place to ensure that the entire system is transparent and accountable, not only to ourselves, but to the citizens of Wyoming. And finally, just a kind of a personal observation, I think that it is perhaps not, I'm always going to come down on the side of freedom. And I think that it is maybe not our place on this floor to decide how someone else should spend their entertainment dollars or decide how they should, that we somehow have the right to determine what somebody else should spend their dollars on. I just don't think that's our place. And so, Mr. Speaker, with that, thank you very much. I would encourage an aye vote on the bill.
Anyone else for their second time? Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My good colleagues, I'm not particularly interested in the fact that this is a model bill and it's been implemented in X number of other states. I don't think I heard a lot of testimony in committee that it's worked well. What I do know is that if this is put on the books and the lottery is set up under this system, there's no way we're going to undo it. We are not going to unring the bell, no matter if it works or it does not work. Let's understand one thing. There is no regulation of this corporation by the state of Wyoming. Go to page 3, Romanet 3. the Wyoming Lottery Corporation shall be accountable to the legislature and to the public through a system of audits and reports. That is it. The regulation that's being done and implemented and the control is totally under the purview of this corporation. The state of Wyoming has no control. They're not in control of regulations. They're not in control of anything once this piece of legislation becomes statute. So we've debated the merits of the bill, of the gambling back and forth, but I'm still adamantly opposed to this bill and obviously to the lottery in general, but this is not the way. This is not the piece of legislation to implement a lottery in the state of Wyoming. So on in favor of the amendment and against the bill.
Second time prior sponsor, Representative Wanitzer Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, by definition, an instrumentality of the state defines that they have to work for the best interest of the state. And that's why that corporation has all the powers, so they can just work outside, not be a state agency, and perform their duties. So do not be scared when you read all that language. Their whole purpose is to be here for the state of Wyoming. And members of the body, what is the price of hope? A dollar, maybe two? Have you ever been down and just, my gosh, the world is out against you? And there's hope, and hope has to be worth something in this bill. And ladies and gentlemen, this is not a morals issue bill. This is just a good economic sense bill. That's all it is. A lot of money going out of the states, a lot of money leaving the state. We have the potential of bringing a lot of money into the state from people from other states. That's what this bill is about. If you're worried about gambling in this state, we have it in the center of the state already. We have it in every city because we have poll tabs. And you can go into almost any place in any town and you can pay a dollar or two and you can pull that tab and you get instant gratification. This bill does not contain that. This bill does not contain scratch tickets, does not contain instant lotteries, does not contain video lotteries. But we have gambling here in the state already. Flip open your computer. If you wanted to, if you're not responsible, you could lose your whole house, your whole life savings in the comfort of your front room. That is until they come and take it away from you. So gambling is everywhere. It's a choice issue, ladies and gentlemen. With that, Mr. Speaker, I would encourage you to vote no on the amendment and yes for the bill.
Anyone else for their second time prior to the sponsor of the amendment? Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Friends, I really appreciate the discussion. I've learned a few things that I wasn't aware of, and I'm guessing each of you have been informed on some things as well. In my own community, I don't believe anybody goes across the state line to pick up a lottery ticket. I'm wedged in between, my district's wedged in between two states that have that. So all of us are pretty close to the state line. We can go get one. I don't know of anyone who does it. I don't think in my own community it would be a favored deal if we ran it to a vote or a referendum of the people. And the previous time that it was done, it did fail. I believe that this would be an appropriate time to withdraw my amendment. Thank you.
Third reading, amendment number 2 to House Bill 186 has been withdrawn. And House Bill 186 having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
No.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison. Edmonds,
no.
Eklund,
no.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
no.
Gay,
no.
Gingery,
no.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
no.
Hunt,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparic.
No.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
No.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
No.
Lubnow.
Aye.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
No.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
No.
Semlick. Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
aye.
Vronish,
no.
Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Greer, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 27 aye, 33 no.
House Bill 186, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 186 has failed to pass the House. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion is adopted. We are resolved in committee of the whole. Representative Kraft.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 93. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 93, introduced by the Tribal Relations, an act relating to the creation of unified school districts. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Tribal Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, Yeagy, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson, signed Representative McKim, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 93 do pass. And, Madam Chairman, I would turn the explanation of the bill over to the good gentleman from the middle of my county.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 93 is a Select Committee on Tribal Relations bill. It is the School Unification Student Count Deletion. Let me say this, that it's Title 21, that's Education. Chapter 6, that's School District Organization. Article 2, and it's a district boundary board, 21-6208. House Bill 93 addresses two K-8 school districts, both in House District 33. And these two school districts are the only two remaining K-8 districts out of the 48 school districts in the state of Wyoming. Fremont County School District 21, Fremont County School District 38, Fort Washakie and Arapaho, respectively, both currently charter under Wyoming Charter School Law, high school components. Fremont 21 provides a virtual high school service to 51 high school students, and Fremont 38 offers vocational and career technical services to approximately 30 students. We, as a committee, heard testimony from both school districts as to their situations.
Let me tell you, 93 amends 26208 by creating subsection B in your bill. That's on page 2. And that provides enabling language for the two districts to unify into K-12 districts under the new subsection. The difference in language in A and B is there's a deletion of the number 500. The testimony heard by the Select Committee was first and foremost to prevent and reduce dropouts in these two school districts. Currently, the student dropout from K through 12 in 21 is 32%. The student dropout in 38 for grades 12, 9 through 12 is 65%. The national rate for dropout is 4.4%. Second was to empower these communities, school boards and trustees, to take ownership of high school services provided to Wyoming students in those school districts, rather than have another school district be responsible for these educational services. House Bill 93 will allow these two school districts to determine the educational outcomes and results of their high school students and empower patrons to take a stakehold in their children's academic future. Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I stand for questions on House Bill 93.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you. I have many questions. This bill was originally referred to my committee, and I re-referred it out of deference to the good minority floor leader, as it was a tribal relations bill. I would like to know if we have any idea how we can quantify what the cost is going to be associated with the passage of this legislation, because we are going to be creating two more high schools, essentially. And my next question is, how far apart are these ununified districts from each other, and how far is it to the next nearest high school where the kids are currently transferring when they finish the eighth grade? We just need to make sure that we all understand what this is going to cost, and this is a policy decision to add two more high schools. So if I could get the good explanation from the minority floor leader.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't sure of the game plan if we were going to go back and forth on answering questions. Just another question. There's 8 school districts already in Fremont County, and I guess the services that are provided by the charter school, I guess I'd like a little more information on how that is. Is it an online type charter? Are there students outside of Wyoming attending this charter in a virtual sense? Will that part affect the ADM counts and the state guarantee and all those kind of things? And this is a deal we've looked at in school facilities as well, and I'll have some reservations, I guess, and I'd wonder about those questions on that. Thank you.
Representative Goggles.
Madam Chair, excuse the pun, but I'll answer those reservations. Madam Chair, in your inbox yesterday, there was a one-pager on both sides. It references School District 21. In terms of cost, ladies and gentlemen, both of these school districts have charter schools currently. One is a virtual high school in School District 21. They offer that virtual high school service to practically every school district in the state of Wyoming. They do have other school districts participating with them. However, they are not allowed to claim that ADM in their district. The districts that do participate with them continue to claim that ADM for those virtual high school services. In Fremont 38, it's a vocational, career, technical, driven component. I shouldn't use the word virtually. Their service is to provide a strand of career, vocational, and technical education to the 31 students they currently have. The costs basically would shift. We would see a shift from the charter school legislation over to the formula-driven school finance model in terms of operations. In terms of building, we were probably looking at a new facility at Fort Washakie. We would probably be not looking at a facility in Arapahoe. They just recently had a brand-new K-8 school built for $20 million. And in that district also is contained St. Stephen's Indian School, who we already fund. Looking forward in the future, it is our desire to provide those districts the enabling language to allow this unification to take place at their speed. This would not require them to unify. It would only provide the language to allow them to unify. In terms of distance, Lander Valley High School is about 16 miles to the south. Wyoming Indian High School is about 6 miles to the east. Wind River High School is about 20 miles to the northeast. Dubois is about 60 miles. Riverton is about 35 miles. If you still have that one pager in terms of school districts, we currently have school districts, high schools in this state that are that far apart, 5 miles apart. There are some in the Bighorn Basin. There are some in the southwestern part of Wyoming. And we do actually have approximately 10 school districts smaller than these two K-8 districts currently. In terms of the Fremont County charter, like I say, there are three charters in Wyoming, one in Albany County and two in Fremont County. We would reduce those charters to one when these two districts, should this legislation be proved to be successful, take the route of unifying. And I hope I've answered your questions.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, one of the things that came up in testimony before the Tribal Relations Committee is right now these children that graduate from the eighth grade in School District 21 have choices they have to make of where they're going to go to school. Some go to Wind River. Some go to Lander. Some go to boarding schools. There's two or three boarding schools outside the state that these students have to go to. I think there's only two at the present time. There's only two graduates that are attending Wyoming Indian. And I don't believe there's any attending St. Stephen's at the present time. Some go to Riverton. But the problem is, ladies and gentlemen, when these children graduate with they're not together again. And they have to go out and they have to make all these new friends and they have to do these other things. And the Native American population is a very quiet, you wouldn't know it by the gentleman at the other dais, but they're a very quiet type of people. And sometimes they get into the class and unless a teacher makes an effort to engage them, they don't get engaged, and they drop out. The dropout rate at this particular school is 60%. 60%. The dropout at Wyoming Indian is only 9%. Because these children that are graduating in that school system are able to stay with their cohorts. And that's one of the situations here that we're trying to correct. This school right now, I think the testimony was, has three or four modules, and they themselves have built their own. Well, they didn't build a new school; they added on to the existing school at their own expense, some new classrooms, and extended the size of the gym to deal with this. They currently, they're currently at 490 students. They would probably make this. But why do we have this artificial barrier that says you have to be 500 to become a unified district in the state of Wyoming? The language is kept in that would keep this district, say, that we're in right now, that has three high schools from becoming three separate school districts. That language was not touched. We did not remove that language from with this bill. I think that might answer some of the good chair of the school facilities questions. And this particular school is right now in the study phase for with school facilities for to address these problems. Their kindergarten is growing from going from 20 to 30 students every year. That's how fast these kids are starting to come into these schools right now. Now, is that a bubble? Who knows? But they're going to wind up graduating from the eighth grade and then having to make decisions where they're going to go, some clear out of the state. And that's what it seems to attribute to the huge dropout rate. And with that, I'll sit down or answer any questions. I think the good gentleman up there has done an excellent job. But I wanted to give you a little bit of the testimony that we had before tribal relations, because he was kind of preoccupied with some other problems and didn't make one of the meetings.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and appreciate the answers to the questions from the good representative. Just one more question, and maybe you could just explain the body a little bit about the current facilities and where that's at. As I understand it, then, this probably the real increase is going to come with in the school recalibration bill that we just passed will be in the maintenance and operations will be an increase, I'd think. Student count really isn't probably going to change. I guess just trying to roll this all in my head here, but then I guess facilities. So maybe you could talk about facilities a little bit. Thank you.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Madam Chair, I'd like to thank the good representative from the Center of State for the questions regarding facilities. In Fremont 21, they currently use modulars for their virtual high school. I believe they have three or four modulars for those students that they house on campus. In the other district, Fremont 38, they do have a facility that houses the 31 students that they now provide the career and technical education for. In terms of future, both districts are growing. There is a growth factor that I'm not real clear about. That growth that we understand is in the primary grades. It's in the K through 12, and that population bubble is moving forward. And Fremont 21 will probably reach 520 in about 2 years. Arapaho 38, they are at 340. They also down the road a piece from St. Stephen's. That federal K-12 school has about 280 students. So real close, we have a brand new high school there that was built by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. That was a $10 million high school just completed this year. In terms of facilities, in terms of operation and maintenance, they're not building any new facilities currently. So we would look at operation and maintenance just like we do. We have 100% reimbursement on transportation. These two school districts also have a high incidence of special education, there is also 100% reimbursement in special ed. I'm not sure of the percentage of special ed, but we see a lot of special ed IEPs in those school districts. Hence the 100%, it does provide the needed services there. I hope I've answered your questions. Coach.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. One question that like needs to be answered. Where did we come up with the arbitrary figure of 500? And you just have to know that in the late 60s, there were 170-plus districts in the state of Wyoming. They were K through 6, 1 through 6, K through 8, 1 through 8, special high school districts, and only two unified districts in the entire state. So the challenge then was, what are we doing really for elementary secondary education? And that's how the 500 came up, and we reduced the total number of districts from that 170-plus to 48. I don't suggest we try that again. However, reorganization still is alive, although unused. At the vote, Fremont County was successful in this body to exclude themselves from the Unification Act, the Reorganization Act of 1969. So for 38 years, those young people in Fremont County have struggled trying to find a home, trying to find a decent education. And it just struck me that at the time, back then, that it was a mistake. But we've lived with that mistake for 38 years. I don't see why we now want to have those children, those young people, that their parents are trying to have a decent educational opportunity for their kids, irrespective of the cost. We did it right here. I think we ought to be in a position of trying to give those young people an opportunity. So I'm on and for the measure.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Madam Chair, just to wrap this up, two districts in question have been K-12 districts since their creation, probably back in 1930 at 21 and 1935 for 38. So they've been K-12 all these years. And I do agree with a good representative. We empower those districts, those school districts, those communities to become stakeholders in this process and not rely on the federal brother to educate our students, but our own self to educate our students. With that, I call for the question, Madam Chair.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman McComey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 93 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 93 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our...
Madam Chairman.
Oh, excuse me, Chairman Harvey.
May I have privilege of the floor?
Please do.
This is the third year that Wyoming PBS has recognized the importance of quality child care by selecting and celebrating outstanding licensed child care providers in Wyoming. The 2010 outstanding child care providers are with us today up in this gallery. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce the Wyoming House of Representatives to the following individuals. Veronica Pertesini, hopefully I pronounced that right. Laura Statfield of and Veronica's from Jackson. Laura Statfield of Casper and Kim Sweet of Powell. Veronica operates a Montessori certified program with a focus in bilingual language skills and family communication. Kim is a regional coordinator for Providers Empowering Providers, an organization that strives to continually develop new ideas to incorporate into child care programs. And Laura operates Wyoming's first Nature Explore Classroom, a program that recognizes the commitment to organizations that provide outdoor classrooms to help children use the natural world as an integral part of learning. Please help me welcome them. And Madam Chairman, with them is Ruby Calvert.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 131. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 131, introduced by Representative Stubson, an act relating to labor and employment regarding tip sharing. This bill was referred to Committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 131 do pass. I further move the adoption of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. And I think for clarity, I'll ask the good representatives from the Senator and the State to explain both the bill and the Standing Committee and how it integrates.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In discussing this bill, I've been told a number of times that the title isn't a very good or descriptive title, and I had the suggestion today that maybe from my seatmate that maybe it should be the Tip Freedom Act. Tip sharing, let's talk about the Standing Committee Amendment first. The Standing Committee Amendment reinserts language at the bottom of the first page, lines 15 and 16, and really gets to what we're trying to do with the bill. The language there talks about the sharing with an employer, sharing tips with an employer, and that's not the intent or the purpose of this bill. This language reinserts, or this amendment reinserts that language and sort of focuses it down. So I'd go ahead and move the question on that, and then we can move on to the bill unless there's any questions.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Question having been called, all those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a little bit of background in understanding the bill. A reminder to the body that when you're looking at wages and tips and how those tips are figured into those wages, we have a minimum wage in this state for tipped employees that is lower than the $7.15 hourly minimum wage set by the federal government, but the requirement is that every employee must make that $17 minimum wage. And so if you're a tipped employee and you're not, your tips don't equal that minimum wage, you have to make that minimum wage. It's an employer's responsibility to make sure that every employee tipped or not is making that minimum wage. So that's a starting point we need to keep in mind. A little explanation behind tip sharing. This is really a concept that accompanies a sort of team approach to serving customers in restaurants. You see it around quite a bit. In fact, it's as I was doing research for this bill, I found that there are a number of states that are pushing to make tip sharing mandatory, which is interesting because Wyoming's law precludes employers from requiring tip sharing of their employees, and that's what the bill gets at. And tip sharing is really essentially saying to those direct wait staff, the waiters and waitresses that are tipped, that they share a portion of that, you know, 5 or 10% of their tipped wages. They share that, and it's spread around among those that help them serve the customer, essentially like the bartenders, the bussers, the hostesses, those sorts of things. And there's an underlying body of federal law, and there was a handout given to you that explains some of the underlying federal law that really defines who you can share with, who you can't share with. You can't share with the cooks and tips with the cooks in the back room. But interestingly enough, on some of the receptions we go to when there's meat carvers, you know, cooks that may be meat carvers out and serving people directly, you can tip share with them. So it's really a thing that's focused on customer service. And as we've sort of entered a modern age, a lot of restaurants have adopted tip sharing to ensure that everybody that has contact with that customer, that helps that customer, has a financial incentive to make sure that that customer goes away happy. And that's really, it's a management tool for these employers. As I said, the problem with Wyoming law is that it precludes employers from requiring tip sharing. So there are circumstances where across the state where tip sharing is utilized and they do it on a voluntary basis, but they can't, as a policy, have tip sharing. And that becomes problematic in a number of respects. In asking, you can kind of imagine yourself in a restaurant owner's position that if you have a couple of wait staff that say, no, I'm just not going to share any of my tips with those that are helping me serve this customer, you may have a situation where maybe the bartender is getting drinks to that server slower or bussers are bussing those tables slower, and you have an adverse impact on customer service. And it just undermines this general team concept to service. And so all this bill does is it gives the option of employers to adopt a policy, a wage policy, that says you're going to we're going to have those frontline wait staff share tips with the other people that are helping serve the customers. And there, like I said, there are limits on who tips can be shared with, but there's also limits on the amount of tip sharing. There's up to 15% of those tip wages is considered reasonable, and it has to be reasonable. Anything over that is per se considered unreasonable. And so, but it does give the employers that ability to build this into their policies. And really, what it does is it allows restaurants to do what every other employer out there in the state has the ability to do, which is adopt a wage policy that makes sense for them and their business plan and their market. And it puts it back into the marketplace. I, as somebody who may want to be a wait staff, I can go apply to different restaurants, and if one requires me to share tips and I don't think I'm going to make as much there, I can move on to the next one if they don't require you to share tips. And so it really just builds this in and allows employers to use this as sort of as part of their compensation system. Just one other little bit of information. One of the problems with not allowing employers to require it is that you have had circumstances, and really this circumstance comes out of one restaurateur who works in my city and a number of cities across the state, has over 300 employees who are wait staff. He has people sign in and say, yes, I'm going to voluntarily share tips. He's had a number of occasions where after that employee leaves, they come back and they say, no, I didn't really voluntarily sign that. I felt I had to sign that in order to get the job. And there's been substantial contested case proceedings in front of the labor standards boards on these issues that have been confusing both to the labor standards boards and to employers. But it leaves open this sort of gap for litigation among former employees and employers. So if we allow them just to adopt it as a policy, we get rid of that, and we sort of clean up the system. So I'd urge you to vote for the bill, and I would take any questions at this time.
Representative Davison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On and against this bill, with all due respect to my colleagues that are sponsoring this bill, I believe it to be poor legislation, and I think that it's not a fair practice. This is already being done in these establishments, and I think that if we say they can do it, they will do it. It's not voluntary. I think that we're taking away from a free choice from these people that are tipped. And I, on and against the bill. Thank you.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a question. How many other states are doing this? The concern that I have with it is it just kind of smacks of a little bit of socialism here in Wyoming. It's the idea that you've got, you know, if I've got a waitress that does a good job, I'm going to give her a good tip. I don't necessarily want that tip to be diluted by some other person who's not doing a good job. And I would like to think that the tip that I'm giving is going to the person that I pay. Now, I realize that people voluntarily are doing this in many cases, but that would be my gut concern about it. I just was curious how many other states are doing this.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Or Madam Chairman, rather. The good representative was right. When I read the title on the bill, I got mad. So, well, I'm not going to vote for this because I was in this business, and we had some of our wait staff had a good bus person or a good hostess. They would voluntarily give them some of their money. We're overlooking one thing that's important in this bill, and that's the IRS. And the fact of the matter is that this bill puts into law something that allows the employer to do this because the IRS comes after us. We were required, at that time it was 8%, to add up all of a waitress's tickets. And they would pay Social Security. They would do all the other things on 8%. We'd have to hold that for Social Security out of their wages. So this tip sharing thing can get pretty you know, pretty labor intensive for your bookkeeping staff, but it's something you really need to have in statute if you're going to do this. In the large boxes, I'll call them, if you've ever been there, they have three or four different people, and I'm sure I'm repeating what the good sponsor has already said, serve you. The other night I was at one. One took my order. Another brought me my drinks. Another brought me my order. And that's one of the reasons that they do these different things. They work together as a group of people. And this just allows an employer to say, I'd like you to do this. And up front, it's not coerced. If you want to go to work for one of those places, and you usually do because they you make a lot of money working in those places because the service is great, the food is great, and you're usually pretty generous. So on and for the bill.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and in favor of the bill, to take off what the good chairman was saying, it is our responsibility as employers to report tips to the IRS. And yet, if you have a situation, I had a cafe where there was a group tip jar. And because I was prohibited from being part of that, they had to manage that whole system by themselves. And yet I was responsible for reporting those tips to the IRS. And so I didn't have a really good way of doing that. And then with the turnover, it just made the management of that very difficult. Additionally, there are, as was mentioned before, a number of different jobs that can be involved in the receiving of that tip. And if we structure it so that the person receiving the tip keeps it and the other employees don't, then you've got a situation where workers go to help the people that they know are going to tip well. Workers go to do the jobs that they know are going to be receiving the tips, not the background jobs that that are actually supporting the service that's earning that tip. So definitely in favor of the bill.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I'm on and in support of this bill. I think it's a good idea because what it does is allows employers to have the freedom to set their wage practices the way that they want to do. If a restaurant wants to set up a socialistic pay plan, so be it. That should be their choice. It shouldn't be the government that tells them that they have to set their pay plan one way or another. As an owner of a motorcycle dealership, I know several other motorcycle dealers that have set up their commissioned employees' pay plans where they share their commissions. I personally think it's a horrible plan and doesn't work, but I wouldn't want to presume that I've got the right to tell them as a government how they have to set up their pay plans. All this does is allow an employer the opportunity to make tip sharing mandatory if they feel it's in the best interest of their employees, and that's something that is, the pay plans are something that are agreed to before somebody starts work. If somebody doesn't like that the way that pay plan is structured, they have the option of working somewhere else. But I don't think we should tell businesses that they're not allowed to structure their pay plans that way. So I'm on and in favor of the bill.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd only like to comment on the hearing that we had in the committee. Two things. This is an allowance of entities to do this. And second is that the two restaurateurs that talked, one from each different cities, both supported it because they believe that built customer service and increased their opportunity for compensation to their employees and for their success. So I'd urge your support of the bill.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On and against the bill. Right now, we have a very small category of workers who can earn subminimum wage, and that subminimum wage is only $2.13 an hour, and that's for wait staff. What this bill does is say now that wait staff need hand in their tips so that it can be shared by others who now earn minimum wage or more at 7.25 an hour. I think one of the unintended or consequences of this bill is it now will allow employers to define whole other classes of employees as tipped employees. So now bussers, hostesses, etc., can become tipped employees, because if we look at statute 274202, minimum wage rates, there's a definition of a tipped employee in here, which says that a tipped employee is one who customarily and regularly receives more than $30 a month in tips. That person can earn $2.13 an hour, and I don't think we want to go there. Again, on and against this.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to just, I rise in support of the bill, and I want to share with the body something. When I was in the service, we had some interesting things. We had lots of banquets, functions, and things that went on. And there was one saying, and I won't use the language that we used, but I'll give you the idea. When the server brought you the soup, the question was, always treat the server very well, because remember what the server can do with the soup. And I'm going to leave that to your imagination. And the reason why I mention that is this food preparation stuff starts back in the kitchen, and all these people touch this along the way. And I think that they ought to have fair compensation. I definitely rise in support of this bill and remember the soup story.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I rise in opposition to this bill. I think the good representative from House District 13 hit the nail on the head. This will make everybody a tipped employee so they can all benefit from making $2.13 an hour. On and against this bill, I also agree with the lady who lives on the banks of the Hams Fork River in Lincoln County. When I go to a restaurant, I tip the waitress. We don't want the employers getting in the waitresses, the waitstaff's building. My wife used to be a waitress. If the cooks were good to her, she gave them part of her tip. The busers were good to her, she gave them part of her tips voluntarily if she wanted to. I'm not sure. My question would be, do the busers make $2.13 an hour now, or do they make more than that? On and against the bill. Thank you.
Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, I would just point out that that's misinformation. Nobody makes $2.13 an hour. Nobody makes less than the federal wage, $7.25. Nobody.
Representative Blake.
Talking with some people at a restaurant in this city right here, waitresses, they don't get brought up to that staff because their employer doesn't do that for them, and nobody investigates that. Now, whether the good attorney from Albany County says nobody makes that, I beg to differ with him. If the employer doesn't bring you up to that wage and maybe you complain about it, maybe you don't have a job the next day. So on and against the bill still.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to bring the discussion back to what this bill does, that $2.13 an hour is a red herring, because the law is $7.25. And we've got voluntary tip sharing around the state right now. The only difference this makes is it gives the employer the ability to build it into their policies. So there's voluntary tip sharing right now, and there's not a wave of employees shooting to a $2.13 an hour wage rate. That just hasn't happened under the current system. It won't happen under this system. There was a question about other states and what other states are doing, and really this is an anachronistic portion of the law. It is a law that harkens back to a different time and a different way of doing business. And so most states don't have this. In fact, like I said in my opening, there are many states that are moving towards a requirement that employers have tip sharing to make sure that the other employees get to serve in those tips and their labors. I certainly don't advocate that, because I do think the heart of this bill is giving employers an option, and it brings it out of the shadows. I mean, if you have a voluntary system, you can imagine as a wait staff going, you interview, you get hired on, you come to your first day, and they say, oh, by the way, you should really share your tips here, sign here, rather than a system where you come in and they say, here's what you're going to be paid, and 5% of your tips are going to be shared with everybody else. So you take it from what is sort of a haphazard hit-and-miss system to one that can be standardized, brought out of the shadows, so that employees know exactly what they're getting into when they sign up for a job. And I believe me, I look at this through the eyes of a waiter. I, as probably majority of people on this floor, I spent my time serving as wait staff, and I tended to spill food on people, so I didn't get very good tips, and so probably not enough to share. But, I mean, I view this through those eyes, certainly through those eyes, and as I've talked to a number of you on the floor who have been in similar positions, you say, yeah, I always shared with the people that helped me help me serve customers because it makes sense. And that's right. It makes sense. But why shouldn't we give employers an option to build that into their payment system?
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like the good sponsor perhaps to help clarify this. There was a distribution in support of the of House Bill 131, and it says only tips in excess of whatever equals minimum wage, or $7.25 an hour, may be taken for the pool or the pooled tips. So I interpret that to mean that the employee wait staff, maybe at $2.13 an hour or whatever it is, accumulates their own tips and retains them until they have accumulated $7.25 an hour before they are then contributing to the employer-managed voluntary tip pool. Is that the way you the sponsor understands it? Is that the way the bill is written? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is it my turn? Madam Minority Whip.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think my real problem with this bill, as we discuss it more, is that you push on one section of this law and you cause problems in another area. Maybe this deals with one particular problem in our tipped wage employee statutes, but then it raises other questions. We know from previous discussions on this subject that there's probably an enforcement issue. People are supposed to get the minimum wage, but we have lax enforcement of that in the state. So this bill doesn't address this. Our tipped wage has been $2.13 for years, yet the federal minimum wage has gone up. So at one point we had a tipped wage exclusion, $2.13, that was roughly, and I'm going from memory here, 50% of the minimum wage. But then as the federal minimum wage increased, this body has adamantly refused to increase the flat wage. So we have effectively, as a body, eroded the wages of tipped employees over the course of time. Whereas before, they might get more than minimum wage, a lot of them are capped at the minimum wage. And so then to throw this bill in that system and take away the money they earn, our intern told us she had an employer, this might have been under previous law, who did tip sharing, and she got a $100 tip one night. Do you know how much she got to take home of that? $20, because she had to share the tip with everybody. Is that really fair? People should get what they earn. And if we're going to mess around with one of these tipped wage statutes, we need to look at them all at once, or we're just creating a mess for workers. Thank you.
Representative Wallace.
I think I can clear this up, and turns out that you're kind of all right. According to the Fair Labor Standards Act, tipped employees are individuals engaged in engaged in occupations in which they customarily and regularly receive more than $30 a month in tips. The employer may consider tips as part of wages, but the employer must pay at least $2.13 an hour in direct wages. So, an employee may credit a portion of a tipped employee's tips against the federal minimum wage of $7.25 per hour, effective July 2009. An employer must pay at least $2.13 per hour. However, if an employee's tips combined with the employer's wage of $2.13 per hour do not equal the hourly minimum wage, the employer is required to make up the difference. So the employer who elects to use the tip credit provision must inform the employee in advance and must be able to show that the employee receives at least the applicable minimum wage when direct wages and the tip credit allowance are combined. If an employee's tips combined with the direct wages of $2.13 an hour do not equal the hourly minimum hourly wage, the employer must make up the difference. Also, employees must retain all of their tips except to the extent that they participate in a valid tip pooling or sharing arrangement.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that good explanation. I thought it was a good one. And there was a question about what about those tips over the 725? And that is what this bill is drafted to do and what the FLSA standards dictate, is that you're not going to be required tips until you at least make that 725. Once you meet that 725, then you look at sharing the tips over and above that, but you don't look at it before that point. So that brings us back, I think, into focus, which is this isn't a minimum wage bill. This is a business management bill. This is a bill that recognizes current practices and allows employers who have the obligation of reporting all these things to the IRS the actual input into the process to be able to do that. Even when you divorce employers from this process, as our law now requires them to do, you set them up for nice visits from the IRS. And this helps prevent that, and I think that's one of the reasons it's a good bill.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I had three daughters out of four that waited tables, and I can tell you that the one that hustled, the one that smiled, the one that gave people information about our area, during tourist season, it was easy for her to come home with $70 to $100 a night in tips. And so she figured out pretty quickly that if she wanted her tables bussed in a timely manner, she shared tips with the table busser. She did that. If she wanted her plates to come out in a timely manner and look good, she also shared her tips with the cook. She hustled. She did the work. She shared her tips. She benefited from sharing her tips. The other two hated waiting tables and quit after a certain amount of time, and their tips reflected their attitude. But the one who was successful was the one who had the idea that she liked what she did, and that by sharing with others, she was enabled to enlist their help and to invite them to help her succeed in her job. And so at the end of the day, if she had a $100 day, she'd only bring 50 of it home. And that went a long way to her college fund. But she shared because she wanted to, and she shared because she knew that when she did, that people voluntarily aided her in doing her job and enabled those tips to be so nice.
Further discussion, Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to point out that there are a lot of different kinds of restaurants, and in many cases that does work well. And I would submit to you that probably in those cases where that works, that those employers encourage that type of situation because it's good for their employees, it's good for their customers. But there are all different kinds of restaurants. There's all different ways that we set up services, and this just gives the employer the option to use the plan that fits their situation.
Further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 131 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor of House Bill 131, please rise. Those opposed, please rise. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto.
No.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
No.
Flickery.
No.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy. Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Davison.
No.
Edmonds.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Esquivel.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
No.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
No.
Hunt.
No.
Illaway.
No.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Croker. Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Lubno. Lubno?
Excused.
Lubno excused. Madden.
No.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
No.
Simlick. Shepperson.
No.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
Aye.
Cheaters.
No.
Throne.
No.
Braunish.
No.
Wallace.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Excuse.
Mr. Speaker, excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Yagi, aye to no. Gay, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 27 aye, 31 no, 2 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, House Bill 131, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 187.
Madam Chairman.
Excuse me, yes.
May I have privilege of the floor?
Oh, please do.
Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome junior leaders from Laramie who are in the back gallery today. Adam Curry, Sierra Lemus, Augie Bress, Flynn Lundahl, Clayton Larson, and Alex Angeles, along with their co-chairs Larry Strump and Annette Mello.
Welcome. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 187. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 187, introduced by Representative Ronish, an act relating to criminal procedure regarding administrative subpoenas. This bill was sent to Committee number 1, Judiciary, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbuto, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Throne. No, Peasley, excused, Nicholas, signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 187 do pass. I also move Standing Committee Amendment number 1 and would turn it over to the bill sponsor for an explanation of both the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment.
Representative Varnish.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So, this is kind of an exciting time. This is my first bill. So, Anyway, I'd like to give you a little background on this bill. When I spent 16 years on the city council, and I've always supported law enforcement. I even donated 1 year's salary so they could buy some equipment. And when I got elected, my son is a detective and for the local police department. And I said, I'd like to carry one bill for you. What is the most important bill? And they huddled with the other law enforcement agencies, and they came up with investigative subpoenas. So that's why I'm running. That's why I'm bringing this bill. What I did is I came to LSO, and they gave me some sample bills. We really didn't know how we wanted to structure it. I picked Utah because it seemed to be the cleanest and simplest. And so we wrote it, and I passed it around. 8 agencies reviewed it. 12 individuals have reviewed it from all over the state of Wyoming, and. The bill that you see is the genesis of that result. Okay? The advantages for having a investigative subpoena over a search warrant is that a subpoena can be used to gather information other than from the target of an inquiry. They're much less intrusive than a search warrant. A search warrant, you go and put the warrant on the door, you go inside, and the business is not open. It's closed until you get all the documents you want. And a subpoena gives the person that's being requested documents the opportunity to provide them, and it's a list of what they need and not just searching through everything in the business. There's ordinarily a time interval between the time of service and time of compliance, allowing the parties to consult an attorney. You can't do that with a search warrant. They can be more easily and quickly used than grand jury subpoenas, but are otherwise similar. And you have a handout, and I'd like to refer you to a handout. The first page is an endorsement from a national organization that's concerned with the health and welfare of missing and exploited children. And one of the things they talk about is time is of the essence. According to a state which was named after the founder of our first president of our country, okay, 76% of child abduction homicides are killed within 3 hours, and that's why time is of the essence. The next sheet is from a statewide organization of county and prosecuting attorneys, and one of the comments that was made there is that law enforcement officers cannot obtain most victims' financial, cell phone, or other electronic records in a timely manner, even with the victim's written consent. So I know it's hard to believe, but I have witnessed it in my office. These places that hold our records are located all over the world, and they want a subpoena before they can release the record. I prepared and sent releases signed by the victim with little or no results. Sometimes they will release them with a search warrant, but that is to obtain records from the accused, not the victim, and is not appropriate in these types of circumstances. The next is from district attorney, and he says he thinks it's a good bill. I'd like to just emphasize, one of the things that concerns we had when we were writing this bill is abuse, and we should always be concerned about abuse, and so that was one of the things that we were real careful when we drafted this bill. And he says in there, the improper use of investigative subpoena can subject a prosecutor to professional discipline and is specifically prohibited by the National District Attorneys Association standards. And the following two pages are examples from my son of situations that would have been very, very beneficial. So, anyway, the bill is straightforward. The subpoena must be requested by a police officer, and it can be granted by the attorney general, district attorney, or the county attorney. The subpoena will have printed on it a statement that says a party subpoenaed shall be advised that he has the right to challenge this subpoena by a motion to quash filed in appropriate district court. The Section C talks about how it works, okay? Section D talks about witness fees. Many times these companies will charge exorbitant fees, and this just says simply that the witness fees and mileage costs will be the same as what's allowed in state district courts. And the chapter, paragraph E, talks about if this needs to be a confidential subpoena, if it needs to have some secrecy in order to keep from having the object of the investigation being tipped off. Now, one of the concerns that came out in the committee was that even though paragraph B says that an attorney could be, you know, you can get an attorney to quash the motion, and there were some concerns in paragraph E that no one, you couldn't consult anyone under a secrecy clause, and so you would be prevented from contacting your attorney. Well, the amendment, we fixed that problem in the amendment, okay? And I'd like to go ahead and talk about the standing committee amendment. It's a friendly amendment. I consider it a friendly amendment. It just cleans up the language. And also it inserts two paragraphs, F and G. And basically what the paragraph says, that will prescribe a return date and a reasonable time with when the objects can be made accessible. And paragraph G says that when the investigation is closed, the documents would be returned to the person that submitted them. So with that, I'd like to call for the question on the standing committee amendment.
You have heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Question having been called, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would stand for any questions on the bill.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, where to begin? This is a fundamental shift in the protections that we are afforded as citizens under our national constitution and our state constitution. Our court system is designed to stand between government and the people, and I realize that the police officers and the county attorneys or district attorneys are there to help us, and they are a fundamental part of our society. However, they are the government, and it is very clear that we are to be free from search and seizure and from interference without probable cause. And the buffer to that is our court system. If a police officer needs information or prosecutor feels that is correct, that is to go through our court system. That is our protection as people. These are subpoenas that could be issued to obtain medical records, school records, legal records, financial records, all that go to those institutions without notice to me if those are my records. I don't have an opportunity. I at least want the protection of a judge to know that there is probable cause for those records. That is what a search warrant is for. And just because it isn't the most expedient or the fastest, and you can tell where my education came from. Anyway, just because it isn't the most expedient system, that's fine. I'm comfortable with that. I mean, some of these things that we have in place to protect our rights require that I be comfortable with some things taking a little bit longer. You know, if you can't get into a judge or convince a judge to get a search warrant, then you don't have any reason or any need to get that information. In an investigation, in order to fish for information, a police officer may say, I need to go get the financial records of a friend of someone that we're investigating. And they can issue that subpoena and go to that institution and get those records. Now, the people running that institution could contact their attorney and try to quash it, but what is their motivation to do that? There's no notice to the friend. I just believe this is a dangerous bill. I understand the reason for it. I respect the bringer of the bill for his purposes behind it. But please, please think this one through. I'm against the bill.
Further discussion, Representative Nicholas.
Madam Chairman, I was absent during the Judiciary Committee, or otherwise. Maybe this wouldn't have been here if I can do my job well. On and against the bill, it's a well-intended concept, But the subject to of abuse and exploitation in this doesn't really have anything to do with exploited children. This is exploiting your neighbors, you, or anyone that a police officer wants to investigate or interrogate for his own whim. And literally, all you have to do, please look at the bill, all you have to do is go to the district attorney and say, I want to find out this information. And he signs the subpoena, and he walks over, and they can get it. They can compel you to testify. They can hand you this, make you leave your job, and show up at the courthouse to testify about anything, any criminal investigation that they're pursuing. That is not the intent of our Constitution. It's an abuse of discretion. It has all kinds of abuses that can arise as a result of it. And I would rise against the bill. Thank you.
Representative Blickrey.
Madam Chairman, fellow members of the House, I'm not an attorney. I'm just Joe Citizen. And when I look at this, I see absolutely no protection for Joe Citizen. Certainly, we say that Joe Citizen can go and get the subpoena squashed by a motion. But how in the world can he put his resources as an individual citizen up against those of the state and those of the very people that are subpoenaing in this case? So I'm on and against this bill.
Representative Botten.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm talking in opposition to the bill. This morning, one of the committees had a bill presented regarding instruction in the schools on the Constitution and how it would be a good idea that everybody learn the Constitution. And if this passed, it would be proof positive that we didn't get enough instruction on the Constitution when we were in school. Listen, this is nothing but an easy button for not being able to get information in the recognized way that the criminal justice system has functioned under for years. It's a substitute for good police work. Listen, there's a few folks in this chamber, I think, that have been in the position of issuing search warrants. I have. In the last 7 years, I think I've issued probably about 40 or 50. I've denied some, too. The reason there's this judge as a part of the process is that's the referee to determine whether this is just a mere fishing expedition or whether there's really some probable cause to believe that a crime is committed and that this evidence being sought is necessary, that somebody has committed this crime. When I've been presented with this handout with some search warrants regarding cell phones and the sufficient affidavit under oath by the police officer establishes the probable cause, I've signed those. It doesn't take that long. When some police officer is following up a lead and doesn't have probable cause to believe that the search warrant is proper, sometimes they still run it in front of the judge, just in case they can get it through, hoping that maybe it will. But the judge's job is to provide a filter. Not everyone is proper. Now, these rights against improper search and seizure are important. We tend to think that, hey, these are just criminals. We don't care. Well, it's all of us. We just had an explanation that it's maybe your medical records, your private information that's being sought from a third party, and you don't even know about it. Who's going to filter that? Who's going to come to your protection when your stuff is being sought and you don't even know about it? So I urge you to think this through very carefully. And, you know, to pass this, we're taking a deep step into Soviet Union politics here. Thank you.
Chairman Korberg.
My apologies.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm not really quite sure how to respond to that, so I just guess I won't. This is a brand new concept for the state of Wyoming. That is true. I am clearly a co-sponsor of this bill, and I suppose
Basically, the reason I am is because of my past experiences as being a peace officer for the state of Wyoming. I think there's some good ideas in this bill. I would, you know, if there's certain parts of the aspects of the bill that you find uncomfortable at this time, I would like to see you pass this bill on to committee of the whole, and we can work on them on second reading amendments. I think where this bill has real potential to really aid Wyoming in its ability to properly investigate crimes is a search warrant issued in Wyoming. It really has no legal bearing outside the state of Wyoming. So the officer is not able to execute it in person, leave a copy of the inventory. It's only valid for a certain number of days. So this administrative subpoena power has some real benefits and is a great tool, particularly when it's used to gather information from out-of-state companies. So rather than just throw the baby out with the bathwater, I would urge you to pass this bill on to committee of the whole. And I am certainly, I don't want to speak on behalf of the prime sponsor of the bill, willing to work on some additional amendments that might not make the administrative subpoena so broad in nature. So on and in favor of the bill.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. On and in favor of the bill, the last three speakers that have spoke that were attorneys, I believe that all three of those individuals most likely have issued subpoenas in the civil realm where they can receive information and acquire documents, have people appear for court appearances, and the same protections that are contained in civil subpoenas are contained in this bill. You have an opportunity, once you receive the subpoena, to contest the subpoena, to go to court to say this subpoena is improper and here are the reasons why. So to say that this idea of a subpoena as it relates to a criminal proceeding is such a shift in fundamental values in the state of Wyoming, I just think is overblown. The fact of the matter is subpoenas are issued each and every day in civil practice, and it's not uncommon to do. In fact, right now under Wyoming law, if there is a provision for criminal subpoenas, and that is the grand jury subpoenas, which can, once a grand jury is convened, the foreperson of the grand jury can issue subpoenas for documents, issue subpoenas for different items, and issue subpoenas for people to appear without any protections, without any remedy for the person that receives those to contest it in front of a court or in front of a judge. This bill, this administrative subpoena, will give law enforcement a tool that they need in order to continue to fight crime, and particularly crime that crosses Wyoming's borders. There are so many situations where law enforcement will have to get phone records or various records out of state where a Wyoming search warrant won't apply. Now, this is not a case where law enforcement is trying to skip a process. There's adequate protections in place within this bill for folks to counter what they would believe of any degree of overreaching by law enforcement. So I would urge the body to approve this bill and pass it on. And if there are to be some more additional amendments, you know, we can talk about those safeguards as amendments on second reading. So I urge the body to support this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. There were some comments earlier that this was a new concept. I just wanted to point out, simply because it was a bill I worked on back in 2005, this is actually, a portion of this is actually already in statute. We do administrative subpoenas through the Attorney General in regards to child exploitation and sexual exploitation of children. So these actually get issued for that very narrow focus, in particularly, if you look in, it's 91640, it allows the Attorney General to contact any internet service provider, and he can actually be provided by subpoena your email address, your internet username, your protocol address, the name of the account holder, your billing and service address, your phone number, your account status, your method of access to the internet, and your automatic number identification record if access is by a modem. That information has been used quite successfully in the state of Wyoming to track down quite a few different people. For those who have had the opportunity to tour the facility that's here in the city where they do this work, they have actually caught quite a few of these people that exploit children. The only means by which they caught these people was the use of administrative subpoenas. Waiting and going through the other process doesn't work with the internet. That was why we gave that authority in 05. There are other types of crimes where you do need to, where it's not involving sexual exploitation of a child, where you do need to contact an internet service provider. What is quite unique in this state, when you call those providers, they just simply say, well, send us a subpoena, and then Wyoming officers have to say, we don't have that power. And then almost always the response is, what do you mean you don't have that power? We get these subpoenas from all the other states. Why doesn't your state have this? And we always have to say, we're quite antiquated. We don't have this law enforcement tool. So I just wanted to make it clear that we actually do have a tool like this already on the books. It's a very narrow tool just for sexual exploitation of children. I think what the good sponsor was attempting to do was expand it to look at other crimes, and particularly from the internet.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be brief. It's very important to point out the difference between the civil subpoenas, because that is between people. Those are between citizens. What I'm speaking of, the protections of our Constitution, are our buffer, our protection from the government. So it's a fundamental difference between issuing subpoenas between individuals or corporations and that with the government stepping into that role. Our last speaker made an excellent point, is when we have, as a nation, stepped away from or limited our constitutional protections, the Supreme Court of this state and of us, this country, has said it must be very, very narrowly defined, and it must have, and forgive me, my constitutional law is poor, but a significant state purpose. So with respect, that we do have a narrowly defined exception, and I'm glad that we do, quite frankly, but that falls in line with how we modify or how we change our fundamental rights under our Constitution. This bill is wide open. Thank you.
Representative Ronish.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Well, you've heard that this bill is wide open. I would suggest that it is not. And I wish I was more qualified in law enforcement, because I could tell you more why it's so important. And I wish I was a lawyer, because I could tell you why it is and isn't a good deal. You've heard some lawyers talk about, oh, I'm going to search your medical records. That can't happen because of HIPAA. And you know, you talk about fishing expeditions and all these other things. We need to give these tools to law enforcement. And one of the things that really pushed this was a kid runs away from home. And it's important to find that child as fast as you can. And they have a cell phone. And you want to get the cell phone company to ping that cell phone to get the GPS location so they can go locate that child and pick them up. They can't do it. They said, we need a subpoena. Well, we don't have subpoena power for that. We only have search warrants. And so their hands are really tied there. And the other thing is I'd like to mention is the Internet Crimes Against Children, which is the other administrative subpoena in the state, has never once been abused. And finally, there are most of the states around us have a subpoena power, as does the federal government, and it's a really good tool for law enforcement, and I would call for the question.
Question having been called. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that House Bill number 187 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. House Bill number 187 has failed the Committee of the Whole. Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Lickry.
No.
Bonner.
No.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Edmonds.
No.
Eklund. Esquivel.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
No.
Greer.
No.
Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
No.
Hunt.
No.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic.
No.
Kasparic.
No.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux. Lubno.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
Yes.
Pedersen.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe. Roscoe.
No.
Simlick.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
Throne.
Throne. Throne excused. Braunish.
Aye.
Wallace.
No.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 22 aye, 37 no, 1 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, House Bill 187, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, I think Representative Burkhart would like to speak before I make my motion.
All right. Representative Burkhart.
Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Ladies and gentlemen, with us in the West Gallery is former Representative Fred Harrison and his wife, Lori.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I've had a request from the minority party that instead of an hour lunch, we have an hour and 15-minute lunch. Therefore, I move that the Committee of the Whole begs leave to rise and sit again at 1:30 p.m.
You have heard the motion. All in favor? Opposed? Okay. Committee announcements. Chairman Childers.
Madam Chair, your committee number 3, Revenue, is going to meet again today upon adjournment in room 302 to finish hearing House Bill 191, Wind Power Taxation, and consider House Bill 200, Property Tax Exemption Improvement in Service Districts, and House Joint Resolution 7, Distribution of Excess Funds.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet at 7:30 a.m. tomorrow morning in room H10, where we will take up House Bill 250, Outfitters and Guides, Waste of Game Meat, House Bill 258, Game and Fish Pioneer Licenses, Senate File 28, State Parks Volunteers, and Senate File 31, Off-Road Vehicle Definition. And this is for Friday. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Senator, Representative Yagi. This is Friday at 7:30.
Chairman Korberg.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, Committee Number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow, Thursday, February 3rd, 15 minutes after adjournment, room H17. We will hear House Bill 207, Protection of Activities in Private Vehicles, 208, off-road vehicle registration exemption, 246, National Guard disposal of land, 237, National Guard educational assistance, and 248, unlawful protesting at funeral amendments. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet 15 minutes upon adjournment in room H17, where it is warm, to hear House Bill 232, Workers' Compensation Impairment Ratings, 252, Review of State Executive Department Positions, 253, Nurse Practice Act Amendments, and House Bill 239, Child Caring Facility Certification.
Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Thursday, February the 3rd at 6:59 a.m. to consider the following bills. House Bill 218, Civil Recovery for Criminal Act Limitation. House Bill 213, Medical Liability Non-Economic Damages. House Bill 256, Wyoming Safe Homes Act 2. House Bill 262, Healthy Workplace. And House Bill 265, Name Changes Sealed.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, Political Subdivisions, will meet Thursday at noon. Recess. We'll take up House Bill 257, Popular Vote Compact, House Bill 231, Post-Dated Checks, House Bill 238, Tattoo Studios, Blood Donation Certification, and Senate File 4, Elections, Military, and Overseas Voters.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Privilege?
Oh, privilege. Please proceed.
Just a reminder, I circulated just before noon the legislative prayer breakfast tomorrow morning at 6:30 at the Egg, and I encourage you to come if you can.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The majority party will meet immediately in 5 minutes downstairs in B63.
Mr. Minority Caucus Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The minority party will caucus as soon as possible at 115 East 22nd Ave. As always, you're all invited to attend. Thank you.
Committee of the Whole is in recess until 1:30 p.m.